I'm just saying he normally should.
Love Talk Radio.
This is one of our affiliates. Maybe he got mixed up.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week and spend this hour with you. And we're going through, we're still in the COVID time. So I normally don't put dates on things, but we're in February of 2021, and because a lot of people listen to our older shows. But we have so much going on right now, and I'm so thrilled that Kevin Lum, who's been on several times, is coming back today to discuss the financial markets and some other markets and things going on, because it's been amazing. It's been so incredibly unbelievable, depending on what side you're on with what you're doing. And so he's going to discuss our ever-changing market. Kevin Lum, give you some history, is a financial planner and investment advisor. He focuses on impact investing, socially responsible investing, values-based planning, currently leading Foundry Financial with offices in Los Angeles and D.C. Foundry Financials wants to help you do well and do good through value-based financial planning and impact investing. Wow, right now there's so much going on, it just makes your head spin. And now this is such an important time after getting over the shock of, you know, coronavirus, which is here to stay for a while, and you know, I think a lot of us are getting used to these changes, not that we like them, but it's definitely not a time to, it's definitely a time to hunker down, but not a time to get stuck. And when things like this happen, it's very easy for us to just pull the covers over our eyes or just get stuck and not do things. And it's really important to stay active. I don't mean busy active that you don't know what's going on, but just active and get involved. And Kevin's awesome about doing that and teaching that too as well. His passion is helping people identify their dreams and then develop a financial plan and investment strategy that aligns with their values. Whether it's planning an early retirement, having a first child, starting a new business, he can help you chart out your course from where you are now and where you could be. Just because all this has gone on doesn't mean that the basics have changed with everything we're going through. Now, we are not giving legal or financial advice. It's important that you check with your attorney and tax advisors and experts before making a plan. That always has to be said here and throughout. And so I'm excited today because there's so much going on, and I'm thrilled to have Kevin on. So without further ado, hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, it's so good. I'm great. It's good to be back.
I hear you were just gone traveling, weren't you?
I was. I left Los Angeles on December 3rd. We bought an Airstream trailer and traveled the entire country, taking the southern route, going through New Mexico and Arizona and Texas, and ended up all the way in Florida at a family's house. And we're in Florida until late January, and I've been back in L.A. for a little less than a week now. So,
congratulations. So many people have not been able to travel now. What a way to go. What a way to do it. That was a great idea.
It was so fun. Yeah.
Yeah, you didn't have to worry about passports or not being able to go here and go there either. That must have been a blast.
Yep.
And so you timed it with the weather too, huh?
We were in the trailer, and the weather was perfect. We just kind of moved along all the warm states, so basically 70 degrees the whole time, so it was nice.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Wow. Exciting. So tell us, it's so great to have you back because we had you on a few months back, and what's going on? I mean, right now it seems like so many novice investors are getting involved and making money. Is that it's like what we just had with what GameStop?
And yeah, GameStop,
right?
And AMC, and yeah. It's really interesting. I think what you're seeing is a surge of interest from retail investors. And there's a number of reasons for that. I mean, I think, you know, platforms like Robinhood, which is in the news all the time, has just made investing so easy. And some critics would say they've even gamified it, where it just, you know, there when you buy your first stock, it little confetti comes down in the screen.
And
so particularly from more entrenched financial folk, you kind of, there's a lot of hand wringing, but I honestly think that's a really elitist view. Will people lose money and will they make dumb decisions? Yeah. But as we've seen, financial professionals will lose money and make dumb decisions, and you learn and you grow. And so it's personally like what allowed me to begin investing and learning about the markets and finance were companies that would let, you know, an individual investor have easy access to the market, driving the cost down. One of the things that's really changed is when I started investing, too long ago, 20 years ago, when I was in college, it was probably, I think a really good deal would be like $9.95 a trade or something like that. So in and out
right.
of the trade, you're going to spend $20, and it was just a lot clunkier. Well, now with Robinhood really started the revolution, but you can trade for free, going in and out for free, and so it just allowed a lot of people to access the financial markets that hadn't before. And honestly, one of the things I think that's happening is if you go to your typical financial advisor and you go sit across from them and you create a plan and you have average net worth, right? You're not a high net worth individual, but you have enough that you want to invest some money. Chances are your financial advisor is going to create an index fund portfolio for you. So they're going to put you in the S&P 500 and a number of other things, and kind of this, you know, this Vanguard Boglehead idea, you know, John Bogle, they call themselves Bogleheads, but you know, you're just going to, you can match the market by just putting yourself in index funds. And there's all this research and data that kind of gets fed to financial advisors, including when I was training, that's really the best route for a lot of people. And
I put
most of my clients in portfolios that look like that. But what I begin to discover is that the way you build wealth is you often need to take risk on, you know, individual companies. And so I think a lot of people are tired of just investing in an index fund where they're earning a you know, safe and steady, you know, however many percent a year. And they see stocks like Tesla and, you know, Apple and Google and Amazon and all these others with these, you know, just giant growth trajectories. So, for example, I ran the numbers. I don't have them in front of me, so I'm going to get this wrong. But had you taken $5,000 and invested in Tesla 10 years ago, today you'd have $500,000. If you'd taken $5,000 and you'd invested in Apple Computer, you'd have $100,000. If you'd taken $5,000 and invested in Google, you'd have $50,000, right? So these really large returns. Well, had you taken $5,000 10 years ago and invested in the S&P 500, an index fund, you'd have $17,000. Now, that's a turn, but you're missing out on some of the upside of choosing some companies that you think have the potential to outperform the market in the coming years, or just to lead the future, right? There are things in the future that you can kind of see, like, I think that's where we're going, and it's a risk, or you're taking a risk. But like for me, I think there, you know, you're going to start seeing fintech companies that are going to continue to grow and expand and replace traditional financial firms. And so, you know, finding, you know, company. I definitely think you're going to start seeing that happen. And so what I try to do for my clients is I try to help people create portfolios that have the proper risk portfolio, but also gives them some exposure to equities. Well, what you're seeing is, going back to kind of how we started all this, is that individual investors are saying, you know, I don't want to just own an index fund. I want to own a piece of a company. I want a chance to kind of control my own financial destiny. And apps like Robinhood are just making that really easy. Now, the thing that's a little scary is that, you know, you begin to think that you're a genius and you lever up too much, or you risk too much money, because it seems like you can do no wrong. And
right.
that's where you start to have risk. But again,
so they're letting people do what call options or puts and I mean, are they letting them, they're letting them risk the money that way?
They're letting them, they're letting them do options, and right, options can go to zero. But the thing is, if you're not trading too large, you lose. If you lose all your money, it's a real, like when I started investing, I lost a lot of money. It's just a small amount, right? When I say a lot, like I lost a lot relative to where I was, but I learned so many lessons that now that I have more money, I'm not going to repeat those same mistakes. And so I think it's great to let people, you know, to take control of their own financial future and make mistakes and learn and learn. So anyway, that's my little soapbox.
I love it. No, I love it. Now, how do people reach you? Because, of course, if they contact us, we'll put them in touch with you. But I want you to give your contact information.
Yeah, they can just go to foundryfinancial.org. If you go to foundryfinancial.org, there's actually a link in the top right-hand corner. You can schedule a free 30-minute call, and I'll be happy to just kind of chat with you. I love chatting about markets and investing and retirement funds. You know, one of the things is a lot of people have, you know, money sitting in a 401k from a previous job. And they're often in high fee funds, and it's just not the best option for them. And so happy to kind of talk to people about what it would look like to move that over.
That makes a lot of sense. Right before the show started, we were touching base and talking a little bit. And there were a couple points you made that were very interesting to me, and I don't want to, we might just spend a couple minutes on it. You mentioned sometimes people thinking that, you know, oh no, you know, the Democrats are in and the market's going to go down. If the Republicans are in, it's going to go up. You know, a couple things like that. Can you touch on that a little bit? Because I think a lot of people, we do have general ideas out there, right, about what's going to happen. And when you've been in it so long, you know that, if you take control of it, you can still do well no matter who's in or what's happening.
That's exactly right. Like, so if you, yeah, kind of the dominant narrative, at least the narrative I used to hear, was that, you know, if Democrats are in office, business and the markets are going to do poorly, and if Republicans are in office, they're more business friendly and the markets are going to do better. And just from a purely like data standpoint, it's not true. In fact, if you go all the way back to 1900, I pulled some of the numbers together. If you go all the way back to 1900, the annualized average return of under Republican administrations has been 3%. The annualized average return under Democrat administrations has been 7%. And so the return, but the thing is, it's not particularly because a Republican was in office or a Democrat was in office. Like, we get so kind of caught up in these dominant narratives and these stories that are really a distraction. There's so many things that impact the markets. And so, you know, the markets went up. The annualized return under President Clinton and President Obama were both over 14%, that were the annualized return under the Bush, both Reagan and Bush, were significantly less than that. The annualized return under President Trump was somewhere around 14%, which was the same as the previous President Obama's and President Clinton's. But when you look at it as a whole, the narrative just doesn't hold up. And that doesn't mean that Republicans or that Democrats are better for business or whatever the case might be. There's
That's
just a lot
know, though,
that goes on.
A lot of people do think that.
There's a lot of hand wringing. Here's my pitch, and I think I've said this when I've been on here before, is that like the stock market is rigged in your favor. A part of it is the depreciating value of the dollar continues to drive asset prices up. I pulled these stats together because I always talk to clients about this, that since 1942, the last 78 years, the S&P has been up 62 of those 78 years. So of the past 78 years, it's been up 62 of the years. And then here's where it gets even more interesting. The average return on an up year is 19%. The average return on a down year is 12%, right? So when it's up way more than it's down, and when it's up way more than the years it's down.
And it's still up, way more than 3%, 4%, things like you think you're getting, like, you know, yeah, or even, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, so but to get those kind of to do well in the market, what you have to do is is choose good companies or good index funds and just leave it alone. The people who are going to lose money are the people who think that they're smart and smart enough to time the market. It's nearly impossible to predict what's going to happen in the market. And in fact, typically when you think you should get out of the market is the exact time you should get in. And often when you get in the market is when you should get out. Because it's a forward-looking instrument, right? So the markets are looking into the future. And so if you're waiting till that time when it feels safe, you know, that's never going to come. And so what happens often is you have these euphoric rises like we're seeing right now. I'm more nervous when I see a big rise than I am when I'm seeing a crash. And so you have these euphoric rises. Well, you have the people who are nervous, who are on the sidelines, who weren't investing in March or April or May or June or July or August. They're
right.
Like, oh, no, what if the
right.
crash comes? And then once it's gone up for 2 years straight, they're all of a sudden like, oh, you know, I think I probably should get in, because they're getting tired of, you know, going to the golf club and they're, you know, the people in their foursomes saying that, like, how much they're earning. So they're like, I should get in the market now. And then right at the time they get in the market tends to be the time that it takes the downturn. And so, you know, trying to time the market is just, it's just not smart. And so finding
that
good companies that you believe in, and just put your money there and leave it alone.
That makes a lot of sense. So like right now, like say, for example, Apple, Tesla, Microsoft. I remember Microsoft was down to like $20 just not that long ago, and now it's up over $200 and some dollars.
Yeah.
And I kind of was surprised back. I bought some when it was 20 a few years ago, and I was surprised it was that low back then. Not that, you know, and
yep.
Yeah, here it is coming back up now. It's wow! Those are phenomenal history rates. I didn't know that, because I would never have thought that it was the index fund, that the markets were at least 12% over what, a 62 year period. That's amazing.
Yeah, it 80% of the time the markets are going to be up, right? Which is, we get caught up in the noise. There's just so much noise out there, you know, the talking heads on the financial media. And if you want, like, just for fun sometime, you should just, like, go look at go to CNBC.com 3 days in a row. And one day it'll be like the markets are up because of the booming economy. And then the next day it'll be like the markets are down because everyone's depressed about the economy. They have no idea. They're just making it up. They're just, you know, most of what you hear in financial media, or they're just making it up. And it's clickbait. They want ratings. And what gets ratings? Fear and exuberance. And so
you're exactly right.
And so you're better off just turning it off, finding companies you believe in, or index funds, or and here's one other little interesting stat. Vanguard did a research study, and they found out that the alpha, meaning the return better than the market or better than average, for using a financial advisor, the alpha was 3%. So on average, people who used a financial advisor, their annualized return was 3% better than someone who didn't use a financial advisor. Financial advisor was so smart. A huge percent of that alpha came simply from what they called behavioral management. When you're about ready to sell because you're freaked out and you call your financial advisor and they tell you what I just told you, right? It's someone to say, don't be dumb, don't sell. Or, you know, like, now's not the right time to get in this, or whatever it might be. Yeah.
Right.
And,
not to be afraid. And
so not to be afraid and giving you that historical perspective. That, you know, that's the value of an advisor. And it's not because advisors are smart. It's just someone to remind you when you're scared. And as an advisor, I get scared. So my thing is, I think financial advisors should have a financial advisor, because you need someone that can tell you when you're standing on the ledge. Like I've had some
getting right in.
One of the things, just quickly, I ran these numbers recently. You know, 10 years ago, if you'd invested a certain amount of money in Amazon, you know, 5,000, you'd have, what, 200,000. I don't remember the numbers.
Wow.
But to get to that level, you would have had 4 or 5 drawdowns of over 50%. And you had to keep it in. And so, like, for myself, I've had some stocks that were good companies I believed in, but for whatever reason, they started selling off, and I'm ready to, like, hit sell. And then I have to just like step back and remind myself of the same thing that I tell everyone else. No, this is a good company. There's no reason for the sell-off. The fundamentals are the same. The story is the same for this company. And I'm just going to, you know, close my browser and going to go do something else. And that's how the places where I've made the most money is when I've been willing to sit through those scary days. Now, it doesn't mean you should do that with just buy up any stock and when it goes down, say, oh, it's going to go back up. It's finding good companies that have good, strong fundamentals and strong value, like you believe in what they're up to.
You know, when they were legalizing the marijuana, like all over the country in different states, et cetera, and I started buying some of the penny stocks and in different companies and didn't know what I was doing, but none of the ones I had went up anywhere. It was kind of like, I mean, I didn't put a lot in because, you know, so you don't have to put a lot in with the penny stocks, but I'm just saying it didn't, none of them went up, you know, at all. Like, you know, but I was surprised. I don't want to say at all, but some of them even less, you know, that I ended up just waiting, but then selling, you know? So depends.
Yeah. You have to make sure you're choosing the right companies. And often one of the things that people mistake is they mistake a cheap stock for a stock that has value. You know, like, oh, well, it's cheap. I'm probably going to go up. Maybe. But often the most expensive stocks are the ones that are going to keep going up because there is a reason they're valuable. In the same way, there's a reason that you pay a lot more for a Mercedes-Benz than you do for, you know, some other car that's significantly cheaper.
Right.
You know, there's value in that company. And so, yeah, there are some companies that are really expensive, even if you look at the multiples, like they seem overvalued. But it's because they have a ton of potential. And it's hard to value a really high growth company. So Wall Street often gets the value of companies like Amazon wrong because it's hard to value a company that's growing that rapidly and expanding that quickly. That's my
Amazon looks like, I mean, it doesn't look like it's going to go down, right? I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I'm always nervous to say it, you know, that, but yeah, I mean, it seems very strong.
Wow. So is it important to look at like the PE ratio? I won't get into a whole bunch of stuff because time goes by so fast, but the PE ratio or the valuation, there's really no way to, there's a lot that's where they need to call you to find out. We need to call you to find out.
Because honestly, the PE ratio just isn't as helpful as it was in the past. Is it helpful for valuing General Mills? Or, you know, some very staid company, AT&T or something like that. Yeah, it might be. But when you're looking at a high growth company, Airbnb or a Google or a, you know, Tesla or whatever it might be, it's often not a helpful metric. And so it becomes hard. That's one of the challenges is how do you price and value a company that's growing at such rapid rates? When you have a company that's been around 50 or 100 years and very stable in a stable industry, price to earnings ratio would be helpful.
Right.
But often for a lot of the stocks where you're going to make your largest returns, it's not the most helpful way. And so that's right. You either like, it's why it's often helpful to find a financial advisor to help you just because it's a lot of work and research. You can do it, but you just spend a lot of your time. And is it worth it to spend that much of your time? You can hire someone to do it.
Right, and you can work with anybody anywhere, right, basically?
So I can work with a limited number of people anywhere. The way the regulations are, you're allowed to have a certain number of clients in each state before you register with that state.
Okay.
But we're registered in California. We can work with an unlimited number of people in California and the district, and then we can work with a small number of clients. So we're pretty selective who we take on. But
right, that makes sense.
A small number in any state.
That makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. That's, wow. It's so hard right now with what's going on. So what do you think the markets are going to say? Okay. With everything going on. I know, for example, the real estate market, has been holding its own. There's shortage of inventory is going on in many parts of the country. The interest rates are low. They've gone on a teeny bit, but they're still under 3. But a lot of us know that when the, forbearances come due, March, April, and May, we're probably going to see more short sales and foreclosures, although when I've spoken to different brokers in different parts of the country, for example, like in Washington State, they said the equity went up so much that people probably still have monies even if they're in that position. So I don't know, but I'm prepared for, you know, we're prepared to help out people in those situations. But what do you think about the financial markets, or is it just kind of like, well, we don't know?
I think that I think that we're in an environment right now that tends to be in the that tends to be helpful to the stock market. You have quantitative easing from the Federal Reserve, so they're pumping money into the markets. You have Congress is looking at a $2 trillion stimulus package.
Another one. Oh my!
What that'll end up being, we don't know, but that's a lot of money to get pumped into the economy. So you've got that going on. So you just got a lot of money flowing into the economy. You also have a situation where the fundamentals of the economy are fairly strong. So when you look back, the 2008 crisis, you had all these property values that were dropping. You had savings rates that were all at all-time lows. Well, property rates are increasing. You have people who have been staying at home and are a bit nervous, so they've been saving money. And so you have a lot of people who have a savings rates like they've never had before, because they have no place to spend money if you can't leave your house. And so you're seeing an increase in the amount of savings that are happening. You see property values increasing. You see a whole slew of millennials that are starting to buy their first home. And a lot of things are changing in the economy. There are going to be losers. Like, there are going to be people who are going to, like, some industries are not going to do well and going into the future as people reevaluate what their lives and what they want to spend their money on.
Right.
But you're going to also see other areas that are going to explode. So you kind of have all these different pieces. You have all this money that's getting pumped into the market. You have people who now have discretionary income, and they have more. In some ways they have a more of a cushion than they've ever had. And so as things begin to open up and you begin to come out of this COVID period, whenever that ends up being, there's a good chance that the economy could explode to the upside. Now, you have risks, and one of the risks is inflation. Whenever you're basically printing money, you always have an inflationary risk, although the Fed right now says they don't see that as being a risk in the near term. But you have concern about inflation long term. And then you also, inflation, inflation will help housing prices and things like, as all that goes
but,
up.
But what where is this money going to come from, though? All the money that the government's been putting in since the beginning of COVID, all the stimulus plans, where is it going to come from? To me, it looks like they're going to have to, raise taxes, raise property taxes. I mean, even though people kid about saying, the government can just keep printing money, they really can't. So where is that going to come from, in your opinion?
As long as I can remember, people have been worried about the national debt. Will it become an issue someday? Very possibly, but you don't know when that's going to happen, and so
you mean
it's hard
they're just
going to
keep pushing it off? Yeah,
they can keep pushing it. When I was a kid, I remember people just hand wringing about the next economic collapse. I mean, there were these.
But we didn't have trillions of dollars then, of debt.
But it was compared to like the GDP, whatever the GDP was at that time, it was huge.
Okay.
Right? And so you had people writing books about the coming Great Depression of 2000 and all that. So you just don't know. I'm not saying that's not going to happen, but we just don't know.
Right.
And that's where, when you're trying to time the market and predict the future, it's just hard to know. And so that's why creating, a smart investment plan and sticking to that plan while always I'm very highly invested right now, but I'm constantly scanning for any risks. There's all kinds of risks out there. So you've got the inflationary risk. You've got a risk. There is a slight chance that China could have a credit crisis. If China has a credit crisis, that's going to ripple across the globe. When the Fed eventually raises the interest rate, they're going to have to.
It's going to make a difference.
When they do, it's going to cause the economy to slow down, and that's partially the point of it, right? So it helps it from getting too overheated.
Right, right. But
when, you have no idea. I mean, the Fed is signaled they're not going to raise rates for a long time, but there's always be a black swan event. There could be a variant of COVID that comes out that's more deadly and spreads faster and completely upends everything. I mean, the other day, yesterday, I think in South Africa, They stopped giving the COVID vaccine because it appeared, at least one of the vaccines appeared to be ineffective against a new strain that they found in South Africa. And so, you know, these are just a lot of unknowns, but there's always a lot of unknowns. And so that's why create a good, you know, investment plan. Don't over leverage yourself. That's where you'll blow yourself
right
up, is when you over leverage. Don't invest money you can't afford to lose. And, you know, so, you know, people who want to, if you want to invest in Robinhood, do it, right? Take, if you get a few hundred dollars that you got that you can lose, go ahead, experiment, try. Don't invest money you can't lose. As you get closer to retirement, you need to begin to shift your strategy, because we could have a crash. Will there be a crash? I have no idea. But you want to start making sure that you have, you're less heavily invested in the stock market. If you're heavily invested, start looking at potentially purchasing an annuity.
I was wondering about that annuity.
Yes.
I think that's a good, yeah. Yeah.
It can be. I mean, it just depends. Often annuities have really high fees, and the people selling them make a lot of money on commissions, which isn't a good deal for the client. But for some people, annuities, if it helps you sleep at night because you know you're going to have a 4% return every year, are you missing out on the high? Like, could you have made a lot more? Yeah, maybe. Would you have lost more sleep because of that? Very, very possibly. And so this is, again, where it's helpful to have someone work through this with you. And I think one thing I'd encourage people is, when they're looking for a financial advisor, ask them how they're getting paid. And if they're getting paid by commission, they're not necessarily working
not
in your
idea.
Best interest.
Right.
That's not a good idea. So find out where's their paycheck coming from?
Well, wouldn't they be, some of them have a mixture
incentive
of commission maybe, and I mean, they may be a mixture, not all commission, but I don't know. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, they do.
Exactly,
that is actually a thing.
Yeah.
Some people do a mixture of commission and fee. I tend to be a fan of fee only, but there's some issues with fee only, where there's some incentives that aren't always aligned with the clients. So anyway, just thinking, like, being strategic, but finding someone that can help you kind of think through this and create the right portfolio, because you often have someone who's like, well, you know what, the best thing for you is to get into a whole life insurance policy. That's going to be your best investment. Well, they're making a huge commission on the front end. It might be the best thing for you, but you just, like, what's their incentive to get you into this policy or an annuity or whatever it might be? So I think annuities can have a really important role in your retirement plan, but just proceed with caution and check with a couple, you know, quote it, get a couple different opinions. And
that makes so much sense.
So yeah,
and they can talk with you. They can go on your site and then talk with you too and set something up. Or that's worth doing. It's absolutely worth doing. What about people that are just, say somebody? Go ahead.
And even if we can't, like, let's say we've got too many people in a particular state, so we can't work with them. I won't be able to provide them financial advice, but I can talk with them and help them find someone that I think would be good and that I would trust in their local area. So
that's great. That's wonderful. And then give an idea of, because some people, I mean, I've talked to people that they haven't saved anything and they're, you know, nearing retirement age, or it's amazing to me, but then others have, you know. So it's something, you know, everything we're talking about, it just shows you in life, though, that when you were given the numbers and the talking about, you know, 62, 70 years of the history, if we just do something, and you do something every day, because so many of us do get stuck and stop things, or you'll hear people saying, I made all this money back then, but it scared me so much, I don't touch it again. I'm out of the stock. I never even go to the stock market. You know, I hear everything, or someone says, I don't want to, you know, I'm just going to rent from now. You know, there's so many things, and you go, well, but that was yesterday. That's a different story. Not that it isn't important, and not that we don't need to learn by our mistakes, because we do. And maybe they weren't mistakes. Maybe it was a growth process we all need. You know, when you look at life, I think if we always look at it as a mistake, it makes us feel bad. But if we look at it like, hey, I learned from that and I grew, but stay in the game, right? That's what I'm seeing and hearing from a lot of people. And I'm seeing it even with business and even with what we do. I have to leverage myself out more. I get too involved in the day-to-day, and you know, and you look at it and you say, hey, wait a minute, but that's okay. We can start from today, right, and move forward. I'm going to switch over to get your opinion. You might say to me, I don't want to talk about this, but you tell me, what do you think? And I have some Bitcoin, and I have some cryptocurrency, and I did sell some of mine recently when it went way up, because I am that type of investor where I go, you know, I don't I'm not. It may go way, way up, and it was okay. You know, I made a good rate of return, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So I look at it and sometimes go, hey, that was a little bit I put in. I made a great profit. I'll pull that out. I'll still keep some other in. You know, we just have different ways of doing things, right? Different. I mean, we all want to be comfortable. What do you think about this Bitcoin right now and the markets? I mean, Elon Musk says, hey, it's good, and then all of a sudden it's going up, but then I'm glad he corrected himself on that a little bit, right? Because some people – but it's the same as what you were saying earlier, that the news will say, you know, this, or their financial news will say this is a good day, this is a bad day, and it isn't always the case. So what do you think? Because cryptocurrency, in my opinion, is here to stay. I think it probably may get regulated more and et cetera, and, you know, we're going to accept it because I believe in it. But what's your take on it?
Yeah. I think blockchain technology is here to stay, and I think Bitcoin probably will be. If a client wanted to invest some of their money in Bitcoin, I wouldn't tell them not to. I wouldn't put their money in Bitcoin, just really risky for an advisor, at least right now. I think some advisors probably going to, and they're probably going to get sued. And if they end up winning, then you'll see more advisors do it. But advisors are kind of risk averse. Mm. They don't want to be the first person to put their clients' money in Bitcoin.
So much sense.
But I would tell, if someone said, you know, I'm thinking about putting some money in Bitcoin, I would not tell them not to. But I would also warn them it's a very volatile asset. And it's interesting, particularly when you think about Bitcoin. You know, some people try to make the case like it can be like a currency. And there's back in the day, you know, there were Bitcoin, you know, restaurants were accepting Bitcoin for pizza, and people were buying real estate with Bitcoin. Well, one of the guys who bought real estate with Bitcoin, there's a whole big Wall Street Journal article about him. In 2014, he bought some land in Tahoe for a little over $1 million in Bitcoin. Well, he just reposted that article and said that land today cost me $127 million. Had I just held the Bitcoin, I'd have way more money than if I used
right.
it for transactions. Well, it can go the other way. Let's say I take Bitcoin to pay
exactly.
for pizza, you know, and it drops, which it will do.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden, by the time I get home, I made $20 selling a pizza to you. By the time I get home from delivering it, it's only worth $10. That,
exactly.
It's not a very good
deal. You're right.
And so there's just a lot of questions, and I think, particularly as it becomes more highly regulated, one of the things people don't think about is we don't know who owns the giant chunks of Bitcoin. We do know that a lot of it is held by people or entities in China. I think it's like 60%. And so there are risks out there to Bitcoin.
Definitely.
And to cryptocurrency in general. But if you want to take 1% of your net worth and you can afford to lose
everything.
Right,
it's a small amount of money. Right.
So I agree.
I almost bought
at 10,000 in August of last year. And I did the research, and I got nervous, and now I wish I would have. But I also know that if I bought it today, it could drop to 25,000 tomorrow. It could go to zero. You know, I just don't know. But
exactly.
I think it's a small percentage of your portfolio, and you just want to own a little bit. I think that's fine.
I think that's a great way to put it. I just a small amount. It went up great, and then I'm selling it because I sold it a few weeks ago. But still, I keep some. I mean, I've been using Coinbase, and Coinbase doesn't support like Dogecoin. What do you think about that? That was a made up thing, and look what happened. Isn't it kind of bizarre?
It's bizarre.
I don't know.
It's bizarre. And that's the thing, right? People
bizarre.
Are saying, well, there's a limited number of Bitcoin, which is why it's going to be worth more, like gold, right? There's a limited amount. You got to buy new. Well, yes, but there's always a new Dogecoin, or there's some new coin that's always out there. So it's a little bit of the Wild West, but you can make a lot of money in
That's very much a Wild West. Interesting, though, is we need to pay our capital gains on the money. We need to disclose it, because I think what I've heard and seen is a lot of people with the Bitcoin weren't disclosing it, and that's where it's going to come back and bite people, because they're, you know,
exactly.
And then my thing is to kind of use things in the exchanges or companies that are U.S.-based. And I know good friends of mine were trying to get me into 2014 into some Bitcoin. It was like a multiple level thing out of the country, and I didn't do it. I said, no, I'm just not going to do it, because there are just too many variables. It just didn't make sense, and, you know, and just a lot of things. It was interesting. But,
Yep.
And it is nice to sleep at night and be comfortable. It's good to get in the game, though, I think, for any whatever we're doing. Just like somebody, if they've lost a business, to start another one, you know, get back in. And or
yep.
not to let your history be your future. And
exactly.
And, you know, it's some of the expense, some of the lessons are just wonderful, actually, when you look at your life. So the blockchain technology is something I think even banks are looking at, and they use it in it's really great for immigration and being able to document people all over the world. There's some really neat things for people that aren't familiar that are listening in blockchain technology. It's really worth learning about that, I believe, because it's
I agree.
I think blockchain, you know, it's really interesting. It's kind of neat. Yeah, the Bitcoin craze. I know somebody the other day was telling me, I'm putting this money in. Oh, my gosh, I would have 5,000. I should have put more in. And I'm going, oh, wow, I think you should just take a deep breath and just work on your stuff. But I'm not giving them the money.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Because it can – but, wow, you've done really well with it, and you're such an expert at this, too. I just really appreciate you being here. And those companies, just like Robinhood and the other companies, what do they make money by advertising? How do they make money if they don't ever have any fees?
It's complicated. It's actually
okay.
Pretty controversial. But essentially,
okay.
They sell their order flow to high-frequency traders who then make just pennies on every transaction, and they pay Robinhood for that right. It's really difficult to explain,
okay.
There's a lot of misunderstanding about it. But that's where they're making their
right.
money. They're making their money from selling their order flow to high frequency trading firms, market making firms like Citadel Securities maybe. That's where they're making
okay.
their money, and that's where most brokerage firms are making their money, through selling order flow.
Okay. So I guess somebody's new and they don't know how to do it. They need to contact. I mean, I know you're swamped too, and you've got certain things. Yeah. So they just need to get in and do. And your message about that you mentioned about people having 401ks with past jobs, it's really important. Probably do something with that and roll it over.
I mean, for some people it won't make sense. It's not like I won't say a blanket that's what you should do, but most people, that's the best thing. That's in their best interest, to roll into an IRA that they can control or a financial advisor can control.
Wow. Now, when you do with your stock, this is just a quick, simple question. Like, say, for example, I wanted to buy Amazon. And so I'm not able to just buy a piece of Amazon. Say I don't want to spend $30-some-hundred on one share, right? So
yeah.
Isn't there a way to buy a fractional piece of it? Or do you have to go through that, like a broker?
Well, yeah, you have to have a broker to do it, to buy any, but your broker has to support that. So the platform we use supports that. A couple platforms we use. One supports it, one doesn't. But Robinhood supports it. I think Charles Schwab supports it. There's some others out there.
Ameritrade, I don't think does. I don't know, but I have to double check. But it's just
it doesn't, which is interesting because Charles Schwab, I think, does, and they own TD Ameritrade, but the platform hasn't transferred over yet. So
I wonder why. I don't know.
It's just legacy systems and what they can do. Once they merge, they'll probably be able to. And I think that is the future, right? Being able to fractional shares will be the future. Everyone will be able to do it in the future, but just not yet.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's awesome. Very good, though. So, Ivan, I'm asking different questions, and you've covered a lot. But I'll turn it over to you to cover what else you think people need to get ready for this, what's happening right now. Just because a lot of people, I mean, I'm hearing a lot of people have done very well this since March. You know, at first it was really bad.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, it's gotten really good. And, where to go from there?
Yeah, so a couple things I would suggest that people do is make sure you're diversified. Stocks don't always go up, and these stocks that have had these meteoric rises are very possibly going to pull back. And when they pull back, it will be a giant pullback. If it, you know, like the stocks that go up really fast are the ones that are going to come down really fast. And so if you've got all your money in just a couple stocks, that's not really, um, let's, just because you have three or four different stocks, that's not diversified. You need to be diversified across asset classes. And so I'd suggest, like, take some of your money out. If you've done really well, take some of that money out. Maybe purchase some real estate with part of it, or put in a REIT, a real estate investment trust, and invest some in international stocks, invest some in commodities. You know, commodities and international stocks have done worse or more poorly than the S&P 500, than, you know, U.S. equities over the past 10 years. But in financial markets, it tends to be, this isn't always the case, but what has done poorly the past 10 years will outperform the next 10 years. So, you know, looking at maybe buying an index fund or a mutual fund that has exposure to the commodities market might be a smart idea. And so just making sure you have, you know, a well-diversified portfolio that's not all, you know, GameStop and AMC or whatever the hot new stocks are today. Because as you saw, you know, that stock went to $400 and now it's like $50. You know, so you...
You know, it was unbelievable. I think a man in his 30s, put 20 or 30,000 in and ended up making multi-million? That's unreal.
Millions. Yeah, yeah.
What are the odds of that, though? I mean, that's just because they really ran it up, right? They were able to do that with so many people.
Yeah, there was some strategy behind it. I mean, it had a high short interest, and when you have high short interest, you end up creating a squeeze on the stock, which makes it shoot up even higher. And so that's part of why we saw increase like that. And so there was some real strategy on the part of some of the people who were behind that particular stock. So.
Do you think that's going to happen again? I mean, that was outrageous. I was like, unbelievably, I don't know. Guess that's what they have different sites where people take chances.
Yeah, I definitely think you could see something like that happen again. But what stock that'll be, it's always hard to say.
That makes sense.
Don't put all your money on one stock and don't invest what you can't afford to lose. Make sure it's diversified. And your diversification can be, you know, if you have a 401k at work and that's all in the S&P 500, then when you look at if you're investing some of your own money, then maybe you should have that more allocated to international stocks and commodities and real estate investment trusts and things like that. So think about your whole asset portfolio. You know, where's your money invested at work? What exposure do you have there that maybe you don't have as much control over?
Right. That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And then there's just a lot of strategies that people can use. You know, as they become more sophisticated, they can use, you know, margin to pull some money out of their account. If they, you know, like their companies right now have margin rates on stocks that are on your account that 1.5%. And so using that really wisely, if you're a sophisticated investor, can be something that's really worthwhile to think about. So instead of borrowing money, you can basically just borrow money from your brokerage account. So you don't have to liquidate a stock position that you have. You know, so for example, I've got a position that I bought in April. I want to pull some money out of my account so I can just use margin to do that because I want to be, I don't want to have a short-term capital gain. That's one of the things that people who are trading need to think about, depending on the tax bracket. If they're going in and out of stocks really quickly, they're going to be taxed as short-term capital gains as opposed to long-term capital gains, which means they're going to
right.
pay a lot more in and taxes.
Now, if it's a retirement account, they can get a. I mean, that depends what that is, right? So they just
right.
leave it
yeah,
in there.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. 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 If it's a retirement.
No. That's important. I mean, that's just good. But that's good that you. Yeah. So then they can just leave it in there and do that. Boy, there's so much to know, and but it sounds like so much fun, though. Also, when you look at it, you put all your eggs in one basket. You have some real estate, some stocks, some, you know, the other. Investments. It's definitely.
I think it's an exciting time, I think it's an exciting time to be invested in the markets. I think it's exciting to buy a company. You know, when you buy stock, you have shares in a company. You are one of the owners of that company, and your fortunes are tied up with its fortunes, and that's really exciting as opposed to just having an index fund where you own like you know tiny sliver of all the stock. To say, you know what, I have an investment in Apple, or I have an investment in Tesla, or whatever company it is, and to follow what's going on with
that
company.
You know, it's so funny you saying that. I never. That's so smart. I never look at it that way. I do have some Tesla and I have some Apple, but I never think like I'm really one of the owners. But I mean, well, you know, we own shares. I own shares, not me, not we. But that's a good way to. That's the reality, right? We're putting money into these companies.
Yeah. And, you even have a proxy vote as a shareholder. You have a vote.
Before COVID, it would be so cool to go do that, but you just get a proxy vote online, right? Pretty much.
Now you do. You're right. Yeah.
See, for me, it'd be fun to go meet everybody, right? And go to the meetings.
Yeah. Yeah. No. You can go to the shareholder meetings. And so, you know, thinking about the problem, I think, with the whole index movement is it's become basically this kind of thing that's out there. You don't really think about the fact that I actually own a piece of a company. And the problem with an index company or index funds from kind of a, you know, a impact perspective is that
right.
means you may own companies that don't align with your values.
Whereas when you're
choosing individual companies, you're able to choose companies that are aligned with your values and you're able to vote on resolutions that come up. And you could say, well, I just have one vote, which is true, or however many shares you have that many votes.
Right.
But there have been investors who've been activist investors and banded together and had companies change policies. And so you just have I think it's exciting to be able to own a piece of the company and to be part of it.
I do
its
too.
History and its future. And
no, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful. And it's funny, we all need to reframe how we do this sometimes, you know, because we don't give ourselves enough credit for all that we're into and all that we're doing because we're not looking, you know, not looking at it that way. You know, we're saying, oh man, I should have done this. No. But that's not, it's really, it's wonderful. I love the way you put that out there because, we all need to do that. And, so hopefully the COVID's going to be gone soon and we can all meet people and do things. And I love networking. I just love it. I love people and meeting people from all over. And, it's
I'm
exciting.
Ready to get back
Gosh.
To be able to go to conferences and all that again.
Oh, I know. I think ClickFunnels is doing another. I don't know. I think they're putting something else together. But I know.
Yeah,
I was just on the webinar
about that.
Oh, okay. I don't know what they – I didn't get on it, but they were talking about it coming up soon, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be September of next year, so you can still actually get
2022? 2022?
No, actually, sorry, I'm wrong. September of this year, 2021.
Okay.
I'm getting
okay.
that COVID has made me lose track of what year and what day it is.
Oh, I totally, absolutely 100%. And see, I've been able to work virtually for like 20 years, the way we do it, the way I set it up with the agents out of 35, you know, and so it wasn't as difficult to make the switch. The hard part's been like Hawaii's been shut down so much, you know, and I'm usually there, you know, and too. And so it's, but you're right. It's nice in one hand because we actually can focus more on certain things that mean a lot to us, right? Because we haven't had to run in 10 directions if we're traveling a lot, which I normally was on planes every month. But I agree with you totally. It's been interesting. And I've done some Zoom webinars. We do those are, you know, I love the webinars, but I've also gotten on some big seminars that normally are in person, and it's just been really fun to with the breakout rooms and all the things that you're able to do now with Zoom. So much didn't stop completely, and it's really fun to play with people that think like you do. When I say play, you know what I mean. It's really fun to get in and have that energy. And I'll tell you, on one of the days, I won't mention the political stuff, but it was a really bad day. And it was like, oh gosh. Well, I was getting on Les Brown's, one of his speaking groups that I'm in, and just the 2 hours getting on that, I just felt so much better. You know what I mean? I'm good with controlling my emotions and my ways and all that, but it was just like, wow, you know, where before I was feeling like, oh my gosh, this is so depressing, what's going on in our world and on the, you know, the news. So it really is, it is really good to connect and keep going. And we're all blessed and keep doing it and get excited, and follow your passions. I agree with you with what you're saying about the aligning with companies that with your value system. You know, it's hard to put money into something or support something that is totally foreign to what you believe. So, well, we are down to the wire, and it's always a pleasure.
Yes, always.
me. I want to talk to you soon, I hope, and we'll give your contact information out again. It's Foundry Financial, but you can they find you, well, through us, of course, but also the website, is it foundryfinancial.org?
Yeah, just foundryfinancial.org. Okay. foundryfinancial.org, or they can just Google Foundry Financial. There's only a couple, I think one other one pops up, or they can just go to my personal website, kevinlum.com, and there should be a link from there as well.
Okay, and LinkedIn also?
LinkedIn as well, yeah. So lots of ways.
That's perfect.
I'm on Twitter at Kevin Lum. I am on LinkedIn, I think just Kevin Lum. So lots of ways to find me online.
Fantastic, and we'll always put you in touch too. It's awesome. Awesome, awesome. Well, you have a wonderful day. And if any
you as well.
News you want to give to anybody, just to keep it going.
Yeah, no, I think my advice is the same as always, is just, you know, be diversified and keep a calm head, and, you know, even when things seem really seem nerve-wracking or volatile in the stock market, just to have a long-term perspective and to remind yourself that stocks go up more than they go down, and over the long run, you know, they're in your favor. So.
And you mentioned earlier, like, all the noise really messes us up. So just kind of ignore the noise, right? Keep that tunnel vision.
Just ignore the noise. And, like, instead of sitting in front of your, you know, watching what your portfolio is doing, enjoy your family and do, you know, things that you love doing. And the people who are going to make the most money are the ones who learn to just kind of set it and forget it, assuming they made, you know, wise investments.
Right.
And for many people, it's worth finding someone to help you to take that burden off of you, so you can enjoy your retirement or enjoy, you know, the stage in life that you're in. I'm a big fan of finding people who are good at what they're doing and partnering with them.
Yeah, and you are, and that's you're the best, great one to do it with. So absolutely. So
well,
everybody
thanks for having
out there,
me on again. Great. And
I will talk to you soon and keep in touch. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you.